Hello, this is Scott Stimson, your host for the San Carlos Computer Club, and this is an intro for our last meeting on April 27th, 2021. These intros have been a combination of the creativity of my family and I, and most specifically, my daughter, Bibiana. However, this weekend, she was unavailable to help me record. So I asked her to send me a recording of her and her friend at their sleepover trying to introduce our club meeting. The following is what I got back. Tech on.
This is Bibiana, and I'm over here with
Avery.
And what's your favorite color?
Yellow.
Last time we did this, you said it was orange.
Yeah, it was yellow.
Oh, wow. We're doing the audio. We're actually doing it seriously now.
Yeah.
Apparently we are.
Oh, man.
See you next week.
Next week.
Tech on.
Tech on.
Yay, you did it.
Called VM VirtualBox Manager up and running.
Okay.
Now I have to get an image. What do I got to get in there?
Okay, so you're doing the Home Assistant as a VirtualBox application.
Yes, I want to put Home Assistants into the VirtualBox.
Okay, so you'll have to bear with me because I was working on two different projects.
Yeah, what the heck was that other one you posted? You sent me a message for it. It was a security system?
No, this is for integrating Alexa into Home Assistant.
No, earlier.
Oh, Parrot OS.
Parrot, that's
yeah.
What it was.
And so I was trying to run Parrot as an installed, a live CD, and I could not get it to install. I could run it as a live CD, but I couldn't run it as an installed image on VirtualBox.
But what is it?
It's a distribution of Linux that's all security oriented. Has a number of tools in it for checking like holes in firewalls and things like that.
Immense interest to you, not to me.
Yeah, probably the one thing that I found really fascinating that probably anybody could appreciate is there was an easy push button Tor onion router. So like if all of a sudden you wanted to take advantage of an onion router, you just hit a button, turn it on, and now your data is just spread all over. And I didn't even appreciate the consequences of such a thing, but at the exact same time I turned it on for shits and giggles, I was doing a different network test, and all of a sudden my data was just all over the place. Not it was just nonsensical. All I was trying to do was a trace route to see where to ping out there to a node and come back, but with this onion router on, it was all over the place. It was nonsensical, the information that was coming back from my tool. And I'm like, what's going on? This doesn't make any sense. And then that's right. I turned fucking onion router on. Turn it off. Oh, look, everything looks great.
Everything's back. Magic.
Yeah. Everything's traceable. That's literally the way you should look at it. Now everything's traceable.
Oh, I see. But before, with the onion router on, nothing's traceable.
Yeah, it made no sense at all. I was like trying to ping my home router, and it was taking me way out onto the internet for no apparent reason.
Well, what's that used for? I don't get it. If you can't make sense of it, what's it used for?
No, that's absolutely the point. The point is to make nonsensical data so that it's difficult to trace.
Yeah, nobody can trace it, but when you're sitting there using it, you can't understand anything. What good is it?
No, the point is I was doing two different activities at the same time. I just happened to turn it on for shits and giggles. And there you go. I just created my own. I'm like, what is this? This doesn't make any sense. And it took me a while scratching my head going, oh, that's right. I turned this on just to see what would happen.
Yeah, there you go. I'll turn this on and forget it right now.
Yeah, right. That's exactly
Good
what
morning.
I did. Hi, Judy.
Morning, Judy.
So we were just going through some VirtualBox stuff because Bill is interested in this Home Assistant running. And I am looking. The instructions I gave you had specced out a virtual machine for you. Very easy, well, like 2 gigs, something like that.
Okay, I'm looking at the VirtualBox manager with the little penguin and the toolbox on. Welcome to VirtualBox.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So what you would do is you'd hit new.
New, got it.
You would choose Linux Other, and you would name it.
Well, I got to give it a name.
Yeah, give it a name.
Test. Okay. Type is Linux, or Linux Other.
Yeah, Linux Other. In fact, I'm doing this on the wrong computer. I set all this up on a computer that I don't have set up for my streaming system.
Okay, so when I drop down the type, I see Linux or I see Other. I don't see Linux Other.
Well, you drop down and you select Linux, and then after that, the drop down below it will give you the option Other Linux.
Nope. Version. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Other Linux, 64-bit.
I am going to share my display. There we go.
Oh, yep.
This is an older version of VirtualBox I just happen to have on this computer, but it would be new. You title it.
Yeah.
You choose Linux. You choose
and then Other Linux.
Other Linux, that's right. Then you'd set this to 2048, memory.
Yeah, but just go next.
You already have it set to 2048? Oh, yeah, hit the next button from the last
one. Next button, okay.
This would be 2 gigs.
Yeah, 2048, got it.
Okay, and then next, and then here is what I was talking about. You don't create a hard drive, you use an existing hard drive, that bottom option.
Okay.
And you use the file button, you click on that.
Yeah.
And then here, what you're in right here, I wish it was titled, but this is the Virtual Media Manager.
So
this is where
I'm at test hard disk selection.
Hard disk selection. You look at my screen.
Oh, well, I can't see it very well.
Oh, well,
it's
here,
very
small.
Can you presentation it or whatever?
Yeah, let's
do?
See if that'll make a difference. Here, here I am. I mean, it's not very big to begin with, but this is what you should be looking at. Create virtual machine, hard disk, and then it's the last radio option. Use an existing virtual hard disk drive.
No, wait a minute. Back up. I went create. Hang on. Cancel this.
Yeah.
Use existing drive. Okay. And then underneath is a drop down.
Well, you see the drop down, and then to the right, there is a folder.
Yeah. Okay. That's
choose
okay.
Virtual
now,
hard drive. Yeah. Now, what you're in here is the virtual storage manager for VirtualBox. And so you have to add this hard drive you downloaded. So you go up here to the add.
Okay. Hang on. Add. Got it.
And you browse for that virtual hard drive. It's probably in downloads.
Downloads.
In fact, you might make a point of, like, I keep, because I do this kind of stuff, I keep a folder under my user's home folder called drive images. And I would stick it in there. Or disk images. I call them disk images. So if you're looking at my screen now, under Scott, I have a disk images folder, and in there I stick those kinds of disks that I use. And I think that this thing that you downloaded is probably what you're going to use. So you're going to want to file it away somewhere secure. You don't want to leave it in your downloads folder. You'd want to put it somewhere specific so it doesn't get monkeyed with.
Okay, I don't see anything in my downloads folder.
Well, did you download it? The OV,
no.
So you'll have to download the VDI from Home Assistant.
But I don't see it. Where would it be?
Wherever you downloaded it.
Okay. I thought it went into download.
I got all these old virtual disks in here. These interfaces have never been great in VirtualBox. I don't even see how I'm supposed to clean that up.
Okay, I don't have anything sitting in my download folder.
But you're sure you downloaded it?
I did, but I might have erased it instead. I'd have to start over.
Morning, Linda.
Okay.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Bill and I are working on a VirtualBox thing right now and testing our connections.
Okay, Scott.
Yeah.
If I download it, it comes as an AZ or is it...
That's right. It's compressed, which is actually in your favor because that means that if it decompresses successfully, you should have all the bits you're supposed to have.
Yeah, okay.
And so that's one of the reasons compressing it like that's a good idea. It's also smaller because it's compressed. You can open that using that archive manager we talked about.
Yeah, I know. I've succeeded in doing that.
Okay. And then take what's in it and put it in a specific place in your computer so that it doesn't get monkeyed with. Because you don't want to accidentally throw it away. You don't want to accidentally rename it or move it.
Okay, so once I've got that, then Home Assistant will start running. I can run it.
Well, you set it as your hard drive for that virtual machine.
Yeah, okay.
And so then what happens is it starts up. When you start it up, it's a black screen with a login. And you would just minimize it and then go on to the next step. And what that is it's a virtual server that's running in your computer. It's running in that virtual machine.
Yeah. Oh.
It's a virtual web server. And then you have to go to a local address to access the Home Assistant.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. I'm going to have to find the VDI. I'll probably have to reload it.
Yeah.
And I'll start on your instructions again and see how well I do.
Yeah, yeah. And then the last thing I sent you, which I haven't tried to do yet, is the very complicated way to make everything that you've put in Home Assistant available through the Alexa app.
Okay.
And that is very convoluted. You have to get into a free AWS account. You have to set a number of encryption keys. And that video I sent you walks you right through both of those videos I sent, because it's so static. The things you have to do are so very specific. Both of those videos give you the exact same instructions to a T on how to get it set up. But you definitely would be going through it and you'd pause it and you'd look for this and rewind it and make sure you're on the right page.
Well, as long as, like, I find the Linux stuff usually, what's that?
I don't know. Paul, is that you?
What?
Good morning. Oh, we're just hearing a lot of clicking and garbage.
Oh, that's me. I'm adjusting my volume on my headphone.
Ah, okay. That actually comes through. If you weren't aware of it. Yeah, the click, click, click is coming through.
Is this microphone?
It must be. Because when you click the buttons, it comes through like you're touching the microphone. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah,
really sharp. Really, really loud.
Sorry.
No worries. It's good to know, though, huh?
Because I tried turning my volume down on the computer, and you guys are very loud.
Well, we have a reputation to uphold.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
By the way, your intro to the last Computer Club was very loud.
It was?
Well, yeah. And BB was almost incoherent.
Yeah. Well, she was melting because I was trying to record an intro when they were freaking out about being in their school classes.
Right.
I'm like, come on, if the power doesn't come back on in a few minutes, I'll just tell them why I'll because we were in a WhatsApp group with the school. And it's like, I'll just tell them that we don't have any power. You can't do school.
No chemistry today.
No, that's right. But then it came back on. Go ahead.
I always go to the to your post and listen to the intro. Got to see what's up with the intro. Okay, I'm going to, you can go do other things. I'm going to see if I can download the VDI, get it to a VDI and get it attached, and then start following instructions again.
Awesome.
I'll give it a shot.
Awesome.
Well, Linda.
Linda, you might be interested in what Bill and I are working on. It's last week we were talking about the instructions to set up a smart home activities without having to pay for cloud-based subscriptions. And there's a piece of software out there called Home Assistant. And it's a little complicated to get set up, but after you've got it set up, it does these things called integrations with 1,700 devices that are out there. So it's a way to bring various devices together cross-platform. So you could use your Hue bulbs and your smart things devices all in the same place and give them... Well, what's really cool is if you get a bit more advanced with it, you can write these things called flows. And so you can have a flow that would be like you'd tell Alexa good morning and your lights would change and your TV would come on and start change to whatever channel it is. I mean, just an example of how you might use a flow. Or it might be that you've got a sensor in the room that recognizes somebody's entered the room. And it does things like raises the lights or opens the curtains. But the important part about it, there's two parts of this home assistant that's really important. One is the fact that it's completely open source. There's no reason to pay for any cloud services. So you're not buying into Ring or you're not buying into SmartThing. But the other important thing about it is the cross-platform availability of all these different Internet of Things devices out there. Many people end up with just the equivalent of a remote control in their phone, and they have to go to various apps to get at the different things that they're controlling. Home Assistant would allow you to bring all those under the same application. So you want to bring the lights up. It doesn't matter that there's a Philips bulb there and there's Stern bulb over there. You could address them both at the same time with the same command.
So you don't need, I've got the vacuum, that's one app. I've got some other lights is another app. Another light is off of Google Assistant, a TP-Link light.
Yep.
So what's this website?
So the software is called Home Assistant. And yeah. I put the link on last week's blog post. If you go to sccclub.org, it'll be the one I just posted yesterday. It's the very first one on the page.
Okay.
And yeah, I don't know why I'm having problems bringing it up right now. I just don't remember the link in my head. But it also is, it's a bit of work to set it up. And because of such... They have a service, so you can, they're not selling the software. They're selling a $5 a month monthly service. They maintain the software server, and they set up your, they help you set up all your devices. But you can
is this like SmartThings?
Well, it is, but it's not associated to a specific brand. It's Home Assistant, if you Google it. It will be the first one that comes up, homeassistant.io. That's the link I was looking for.
Okay.
And this is a server software you can run yourself. In fact, they've got a Raspberry Pi project. Like, you could pay $150 for a Raspberry Pi, dump this in it, have that just running under your desk, and then you access your whole smart home experience through a web browser, accessing that Raspberry Pi. And it's pretty cool. I started setting it up the other day when Bill started messing around with it. And they had a service for... Oh, here. Yeah, Cheryl just provided the link in the chat. The article that we were talking about last week. The article is very complete. It's on ours, and it'll walk you right through it. But it's several pages long and gets very technical. Uh-oh.
I like the fact that it called it Nirvana.
Nirvana?
Nirvana.
Smart home Nirvana, yeah.
Okay.
But that, to me, those are the two big things, is that you don't have to pay for a cloud service. I mean, unless you want. Their whole thing, if you go to Home Assistant, their whole thing is about making it easy for you. You're paying $5 a month, and they make it easy for you. If you want to do it yourself, everything's here to do it yourself.
Okay.
And then the other big thing is being able to use devices from different services.
Okay.
And the results, Bill, I sent you that link, those links to video getting Alexa integrated. I'm sorry, did I set anybody's off? the Echo, the Amazon infrastructure integrated into it. And though it's very complex, it's step by step how to get it set up. And then the results are amazing. When he pulls up his phone, you see every device he's got set up in Home Assistant appear in the Alexa app for you to schedule jobs and set things up using the Amazon side of things. When I set it up, I found a service for my Xbox. I was able to bring up, in fact, am I still running it? Because that I could do. It brings up a dashboard of all my devices. Yeah, I am still running it. Let me bring up. I'm going to, Bill, you probably haven't gotten to see this yet, but this is what this Home Assistant dashboard looks like.
Oh, yeah.
I got a printer in there right now. Some, I don't know, I think it's some weather thing that's in there. The Home Assistant itself, and I added this Xbox. These are the integrations I have right now. I only have 4 integrations at the moment. And this is what I wanted to show you. This is the desktop or the dashboard. So it's giving me information about our Xbox in the living room. It shows that it's turned off right now. It's giving me weather information. Actually, it's giving me weather information from the Xbox and weather information from a plugin. It's got me logged into this system, and it's got sensors for the printer. It's telling me that my printer's running. Actually, I didn't know I had that much ink in my printer. That's good to know. that's the printer I never use. I should be using that because the other printers are out of ink. But so the guy that was doing the video had dozens and dozens of smart bulbs and different sensors around the house. And as soon as he set it up under Alexa, which would be one of my next attempts as soon as I get a moment, all of those devices showed up under the Alexa app.
Time for Computer Club. Star Wars came on.
Star Wars came on. Well, I don't mean to jinx it, but everything on my end seems to be working again.
Scott, we're hearing a lot of noises. Like, I can hear you typing and different things like that, more than just your microphone.
Yeah, I've got this omnidirectional microphone. Let me turn that off.
And just because you said everything was working well, I just wanted you to know that.
It's just your presentation that isn't working well. How's that? Is that better? Testing 1, 2?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Let me turn off this music too.
You got a little quieter, but Linda, it's good to see you. Linda, I was wondering if you were on Mark's show last night.
No, I didn't get on. He had company, and I didn't get on last night, but I loved it last week.
Oh, the Giggles tribute was a very moving show. They put a lot of stuff together.
Oh, my gosh.
Doesn't Jerry look great?
Jerry looks awesome.
I'm amazed.
Hey, guys, can you hear me? I need to disconnect and reconnect. Something has just gone wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, you all of a sudden are very echoey.
Yeah, there's something wrong on this end. I don't know what it is.
I know that there was a group sitting there. I wondered if you were there that day.
No.
Well, we were in a motel in Casa Grande.
Judy, hey. Did you go over? Or did you?
I'm just checking to see if I'm sounding okay now.
Yes, you are.
Excellent. You're not looking good, but you're sounding good.
You can't see me. I didn't turn on my camera.
Wait, you're sharing the screen? Or you've got...
I should be good to go, and we are streaming. And this is the San Carlos Computer Club with all the technical problems that we should come to expect every Tuesday morning. I am Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. And I would appreciate it if you need help out there to give me a shot remotely. Just email me remote@internationalcs.net. Well, guys, good to see you. There's people here we haven't seen in a while. Linda, we haven't seen you in a while. Glad you could join us. I hope everything sounds okay.
I've been busy with my husband.
Well, that's...
And all, you know, his heart things. He had his open heart.
Oh, wow.
So,
is he doing okay?
He's doing great. Perfect. All it was, he had the aneurysm. He didn't have anything. He had the aneurysm on the outside of his heart. And then when they went in there, then they replaced one valve with a plastic valve, not a not a pig.
Not a pig valve.
No, a plastic valve. He's doing real good, and the tape only has about a half a more inch, and it's going to be off. Because they put the tape on, you know, and then it wears off. You leave it, and it keeps coming off as it heals.
So they had to open his chest, not like Chester's experience, where they were able to go up through an artery.
No, because he had the aneurysm on the heart, on the outside.
Oh, wow.
Of the heart. So it's been there for a while, apparently. But if it wasn't for the GP, she was listening to his heart, and she could hear something was going on.
Oh,
and
wow.
So she sent us to the cardiologist, who was fabulous, but the surgeon was even more fabulous. And I could not believe the treatment he got at Banner. It was unbelievably good.
Is that where Chester went?
Banner? I don't know.
You know, I got that impression from his story. I made a mental note because the kids were born at Banner.
Because
he
ended up in Phoenix area, right?
Yeah, isn't he in Scottsdale?
Huh? And yeah. He could have had like open heart surgery, but the surgeon went in through his groin and did everything that way.
Right. Well, if they didn't do that, that was the option.
They repaired his heart murmur valve, right? Is that right?
Well, the valve that was leaking.
Well, they discovered that he had a birth defect, and he only had two ventricles instead of three.
Wow.
So that was interesting. But I had my hip done at Banner, and I was really pleased. So the hospital's great, especially the new section. The new wing is unbelievable. But when you're in ICU, you get a lot different treatment than when after you move to the room. You know, I mean, they're in there every 5 minutes.
They call that the ICU syndrome. So many people get out of ICU and have to go back because they can't handle not having all those people checking on them.
Right.
What is that? ICU syndrome?
It's like, so when you're in ICU, I guess this happened to my husband. And when he was in ICU, they moved him out of ICU and he just got really, really bad. And so they had to put it back, and they said it was something called like ICU syndrome, where you get your body and your mind get so used to all those noises and all those people all the time.
All that attention.
And you kind of freak out.
Wow. Uh-huh. That's interesting. Kind of psychosomatic.
Mm-hmm. 5 days.
Wow.
Up there. And then only 2 days. Yeah, 2 days in the regular room, and then we came home. And now we've had, he's had physical therapy tomorrow, Wednesday's his last day, Thursday's his last day, and I think next week will be the last day for the nurse. Because today was his last day for the pills. All the pills he was taking.
Well, we wish him the best. Tell him that we're thinking about him at the San Carlos Computer Club.
We're happy. I mean, think about it. Like the doctor said, if it burst, you would have been gone.
Oh, that's such a scary thought when you think of these aneurysms. Wow.
You know, we feel like we're still too young to be gone.
That's at whatever age, right, Paul? That's at whatever age. You're always too young to be gone.
Absolutely. It's funny because I don't know how long you guys have been in San Carlos, but it seems we came there and everybody was so young.
We are the old ones now.
I grew into middle age here.
Yeah.
Actually, I grew into more than middle age because I would probably be dead if I was twice this age.
Late middle age.
Yeah. I've gotten into late middle age.
So, Judy, how long have you been down there?
October the 15th.
October the 15th?
Uh-huh.
No, what year did you come?
Oh, what year did they come? 2006.
Oh, okay. So we came in 2009.
How about you, Jim?
Morning, Mom.
We were 2012. No, 13.
Oh, well, you guys are still spring chickens. I got here in 96.
Because you really were a kid.
Yeah, I was.
Well, you were young to get there at that age.
Yeah, no, I turned 26 in San Carlos. 26. I met you, yeah, when I was 25 years old.
Wow. I don't think Paul can hear us or something.
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good.
You weren't laughing hard enough, Paul.
We built in 99.
Wow.
99. Wow.
We do still feel like newbies.
But we came down here because Peggy's folks drug a trailer down through the 80s and 90s.
Mm.
Hey, guys,
all the change.
I hate to move us off of this nostalgia, but we are a computer club meeting, and we do like to talk about technology. And even though we are agendaless most of the time, I do have some topics that I've brought, and I hope you guys brought some of your own topics.
Pick me.
All right, you're on the list, Bill. You don't know which list that is. Wait, you're on the list. I didn't say that list is going yet. Hold on a second.
Oh, sorry. I thought I was really
I wrote you down so I wouldn't forget you. I did want to mention, I want to do a follow-up real quick from last week with Judy and her iPad and using Nook. What did you discover what I discovered? I'm curious what you've discovered.
I discovered nothing other than frustration.
Hey, guests, we've got a guest joining us. No, hey, Ray, nice to have you join us. We were just getting started.
Ray who?
Ray Mahoney.
Ray Mahoney, turn on your camera.
She's cameraless and microphone-less, but all the same, we're happy to have you with us.
And a damn fine artist, I might add.
There you go. A plug for your creativity, Ray. Going back to Judy's Nook on iBooks, I cannot find a way to import your copyright-protected Nook books into iBook. And I'm suspecting you never had it. I'm suspecting that the books you had in iBook are digital rights free.
Yes, they are. They're EPUBs.
They're EPUBs. And so those should go right in. They should import right in. But you have to download them separately.
Well, see, they're all in a little file that says books, and they're all EPUBs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all from my book club, you know, the book club. And I was able to open them in iBooks, which is now books.
Right.
But now they only open in Nook.
Well, I have got two links that talk about doing Nook books on iBooks.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about this issue of not being able to do the copyright protected books.
Mm-hmm.
But they also in them say that you are able to convert them to iBooks. Some of it's very convoluted.
Well, one of them I read, I had to put them all to iTunes and then do it that way, but that's ridiculous. So.
Well, and you know, actually, because you have a Macintosh as well.
Uh-huh.
And so that was one of the things I was going to suggest is just dump your eBooks into the book app on your Macintosh and synchronize it with your mm-hmm. your device through iCloud. I believe you can do it through iCloud.
Right.
But I will pass you these links. I'll put them on today's meeting, but I'll also pass them in the chat right now.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And hopefully they'll enlighten you to what's going on.
Okay, thank you.
And I'd be happy to hear about your progress with it, because it sounds to me like you'd rather use the iBooks app or the Books app than the Nook app.
I'd rather use the Books app on my iPad because I use the Nook on my Nook device. So I don't know. I was just being picky. I wanted them to both synchronize back and forth, and they.
Well, the sad thing is, I don't think they'll ever synchronize between the two apps. That you're going to have to make allowances for the iBook app.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't find a good
a good situation where it would go one way or the other. With the same activities, you'd have to do different activities to get it into HyFlex. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
I also had a follow up for Fred, but I don't see he's joined us. He had some questions about the difference between an A12 and an A14. I think that was Fred. Shout out if it was you and not Fred. And I found a good comparison on a website called CPU Monkey. And if you, I'll put the link here, but if you were to click on it, it would just show you the differences between the two different chips from Apple, the difference in speeds, cores, things of that nature between the two. One is definitely an evolution of the other. And after last week's announcement of Apple products, I wonder if Fred is interested in comparing the A14 to the M1. When we're talking about Apple products right now, what you're looking at is a classic iPad with the A12 chip, nothing's changed, or the iPad Air with the A14 chip, or the iPad Pro with the M1 chip that they announced, 3 months ago, and they put in the new Macintoshes, the one that I've just been drooling over. They've stuck it in the iPad Pro now. So I'll put this link on today's meeting, and I'll stick it in our chat. I don't know if any of you care about this stuff, but I know Fred was caring about it. Yes.
What was your final resolution? Which one would you buy?
Well, it really depends on what you're going to use. You know, what's easy for me to recommend to people is that stock iPad.
Right.
The iPad with the A12 to me is is a great recommendation. The base unit's 329. I would get more space in it. I'd pay, I think it's an extra $70. I think it's 399.
$449, I think.
Oh, it's an extra $100?
I think.
You're right. I think it's an extra $100. It's $429. Unless you want sell with it. And then it's $499. And I don't think the cell, and I think that's a great iPad for people that want to sit in their lazy boy and watch Netflix or check their email or read the newspaper or play some video games. I think that's a great iPad at that price point. But then what they've done is they've taken their desktop laptop processor, this new M1, and they've stuck it in the iPad Pro. And that's just an insane amount of power. And that iPad Pro is at a price point that starts at around $1,000.
Right.
So if you were a creator that is very comfortable working in the iOS operating system, then that might be more appropriate for you. You'd put a keyboard on it. You'd use the pen. Oh, the pen you can use on any of the iPads. So it's not, when I say you could use the pen for creating, that you're not limited to just this high-end one. But they've got a 13-inch version. They've got, you can get it up to 512 of space. I mean, it's a real computer in a tablet. That is the beefiest tablet on the market. And so I think that'll appeal. The problem is, here's the thing, is that I don't know if you need a beefy tablet, no matter who you are, because they have not put a desktop operating system on it. They haven't put Mac OS on it. You're still running what would be considered kind of a handicapped operating system because it's a mobile operating system. It's not geared towards developers. I heard a tech journalist just say this morning that until you can build the tools you use on it, it's just a consumption device. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what I got out of it, was until you can sit down with an iPad Pro and build iPad Pro applications, it's really still just a consuming device. It's not a creator's device, because creators... And this is just a yardstick. I mean, you can find arguments around all that. But that's what it comes down to, is is whatever creator you are, you find yourself going back to the desktop for some reason.
Well, there's a lot of things that I prefer to do on the desktop rather than my iPad because of the way a lot of the apps work. But I'm not a creator, so you don't really think I need to do an iPad Pro.
No.
Because I'm ready when I go back. I am buying a new one because this one is, it like reboots itself automatically, and that's kind of scary. And sometimes the touch screen isn't working quite right, so that's on my agenda.
Well, Judy, on those two points, I would, before I put a lot of work into it, I would factory reset it if you haven't already done that and see if the problem goes away.
I didn't reset it. I just hard booted it, and the problem did go away. But I've had to do it a couple of times.
Yeah.
So I don't. This is 14 or whatever I have now or whatever. But I've had to do it a couple of times. So you know.
So yeah, I would wipe it. I would factory reset it and set it up again, and make sure that either you're still experiencing that problem or it's gone away. And then I would definitely bring it into the Apple store when you find yourself in the States and tell them about the problem if it hasn't gone away yet.
And so I won't do any of that until I'm back in the States because really it's old. I mean, my iPad is getting kind of old. So
I definitely.
My iPhone is paid off, so it's time to buy a new phone.
There you go.
That's where they got us.
Cheryl, you've been trying to say something. What is it you've got?
Well, I have two questions. First of all, we're talking about the difference between an iPad Pro and an iPad. And to me, I heard something about the difference involving a keypad. But can't you put a keyboard on an iPad?
I honestly can't think of a use case for the Pro line for you folks.
So when you're talking creator, producer, developer, I feel like I'm creating videos, and that's one of the things I use my iPad for. But you're not talking about that. You're talking about creating software. What do you
think? Well, I'm actually talking about both, but I'm using the analogy of building tools on the iPad to give it a significance of where it sits in this environment. And the fact that you can't build tools on it, you can't build apps on it to run on it, is just an indicator, like a red flag, that this is still a niche product. It's full of heavy, nerdy stuff that can be really appreciated by people like me, but still won't be bought by people like me because it can't do those kinds of things. They've put all this hardware in there, but they don't have the software to complement it. Now, they do have some cool stuff that you might appreciate as a tech enthusiast. They've got this brand new screen on it that has over 10,000 mini LEDs. And so what that means is that you can get blacks really black, and you can have these vibrant colors. They talk about how the current iPads get like 600 to 1,000 nits of light, and how this new screen gets 1,000 to 1,600 nits of light. Not that you really need to know what a nit is, just bigger is better. They can shut down large portions of the video that are black so that it doesn't use as much electricity, so they can extend the battery more. And it's a brand new technology.
So one thing we're talking about is battery life and your experience with it. My experience is when I am using my phone, because that's
what you're using for video right now?
No. Well, sometimes. Okay. My problem is the iPad iOS is too old to do a bunch of things on. So I find myself going to the phone. This phone screen, my eyes can only handle about 20 minutes max, and then they are blurry. My vision is very, very affected with too much technology overall, but my laptop and my iPad way better than my iPhone. Now, is it the screen? Is it the size of the screen, or is it something with nits or luminars or whatever?
Well, it could be just generations of technology. Like the iPads, as far as I know, don't have better cameras than the iPhones.
No.
Now they have increased the quality of the iPad camera in this iPad Pro, and I was just trying to bring up as we're talking the iPad camera to compare the new iPad Pro. Remember, it's got the M1 processor in it, and that processor is significant because it has storage and RAM in it. So it's got incredible performance because. Like the 256 gigabytes of storage is sitting in the same silicon right alongside the 8 GPUs, the 8 graphics processors, the 8 CPUs, the 8, you know, brains of the computer, and the RAM, which could be 8 or 16 gigabytes. And the camera, they have upped to a 12 megapixel camera. And on the back, and a 10 megapixel ultra wide camera. The ultra wide is new. I'm sorry, somebody's fidgeting is coming through the microphone.
Your mother is addressing an envelope, and we can hear it being folded.
No, mom's got her mute on. She's muted. I can see that.
I'm sorry. I do have some jobs I have to do while we're here, but I'll turn the mic off.
Thank you. But it wasn't you. Don't let Cheryl make you think it was you. I'm not
bad.
I'm not seeing the break. Oh, here's tech specs. No wonder I can't find it. So I'm just curious what the latest camera compares to the and I'm just having this thought right now.
It's not the camera so much. It's the iMovie, for example, on the iPad doesn't have as much because it's the old system and I can't update the iMovie. So once I get the new iOS system, I'm going to be fine. But I don't think there's any reason to go to the Pro as opposed to that iPad with the bigger storage.
Yeah, I just, for the price, I mean, it's more than twice the original.
It's still only going to last for 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Way they've been doing things, that's a reasonable way to think about it, is like you'll be lucky. You'll be happy if you've been able to suck 5 years out of it.
Well, I paid more for my iPad that I have now than the new price. And so I think that I should maybe stick with the iPad. The other thing that I'm having problems with, like it could just be my body because it's old, but we've been there. Anyways, the eyes are a problem, and the other is the wrist is holding the book and holding the iPad. And I don't know if the iPad Pro is heavier or whatever, but it isn't a concern.
Well, and let me mention, there's just a couple other things that came with the Pro. They've got 5G in it now. They've got Wi-Fi 6 in it now. And this ultra-wide camera comes with new software called Center Stage. And I don't know if that's – I mean, if you're getting an iPad Pro, that'd be cool to get it. I don't think it's a decision-making factor, but it is very cool. What they've done is they've taken this ultra-wide 10-megapixel sensor, and then they use software to focus and narrow in on you as the subject. And so you can set your iPad up like on the kitchen counter, and you can walk back and forth from the fridge in the stove as you're making breakfast, and it virtually follows you around because it has this huge aperture of space to choose from, and then it creates like a 1080p box that kind of follows you around, keeping you in frame, even though your iPad doesn't have to move around.
So we use the iPad a lot for FaceTime. Mm-hmm. I use it for, I can't use it for Google Meet, but for meetings and things like that. So the camera might be useful in that.
Yeah, it might be a purchasing decision maker for you. It's hard because you've probably been very happy with what you've already got. What you're going to get, the latest one is going to be much better. It's still going to be a third the price, or at least half the price of what the Pro is. It's just, I find the Pro a very difficult product to want to get into. I like all the tech, but in the end, it's just an iPad. In the end, you're dealing with all the same iPad stuff. You can, if you want to get it as close to a laptop as possible, you can get their keyboard. You can get, what is it? The pencil and all the extras for it. I had some tech journalist quote, you could spend up to $2,500 speccing it out like the ideal laptop replacement, and still you would need a desktop computer because it still doesn't do those five things that matter to you on a desktop.
Okay. So, but the iPad, you can put a keyboard on.
Yeah. Yeah, and okay. I've advised always looking for one with a trackpad because they support trackpads now.
Okay. The other thing is, would I take the one with the cell data? But we have a really good cell data plan on our iPhone. And if I made it a hotspot, then I think that I don't need cell data on the iPad.
It really comes down to price and convenience. If it costs you almost nothing to go... Like, if you can share your cell data on a different device at no extra cost, if the device you're buying just happens to come with cell, or maybe it only costs $25 more, maybe it's worth just having it. But again, we've talked about this before. I don't ever think of cell as being a decision maker. Mm-hmm. I think it's really the convenience versus the price. I mean, it's convenient to have, but I don't think I would let cell make the decision because, just like you said, I could always turn my phone into a hotspot if I needed to. And every day there's more hotspots everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's my opinions, just my opinions. Go ahead, Gina.
Okay, my iPad is a Pro. It's a 9.7-inch Pro, and it is 4 years, 11 months, and 24 days old.
And here you are getting ready to change it. 5 years. You just sucked the last. You're trying to suck the last few months out of it.
I have to. I'm not there. You know. So Cheryl, that's kind of where I am. Almost 5 years.
So yeah. Did as long as we're talking about all this. I'm sorry, Linda. Go ahead.
The Pro is like $800.
The Pro is like $1,000.
Well, this says how much will it cost? Starts at $799. So I don't know.
I think you need to go up on the gigabyte.
Yeah. It's the screen size, I think. I think you're looking at the 11-inch instead of the 12.9-inch.
So it says one leak said you'll be able to buy the 11-inch on May 21st, and the following day you'll be able to buy the 12.9-inch.
Yes, yeah.
On May 22nd.
But right? I don't want a bigger one because, Cheryl, it is heavier to hold.
Is it?
It is. Okay. It is heavier.
Good.
Okay. So it says the 12.9-inch is going to be $1,099.
Yep, that's it. That's the start price. And then you add a keyboard for $350.
And a case.
Well, yeah, it's part of the cases. Yeah, but yeah. Yeah. Hey, did anybody pay attention to the Apple event? I've actually got a quick rundown of what they went through. It was pretty impressive. I'll pop them off real quick. New Apple credit card. AirTags, Apple TV, colorful iMacs with the M1 chip, the iPad Pro we've been talking about, first iPad with an M1 chip, and the iPhone is now available in purple. That's the rundown.
Purple.
That's all I got, too. I don't know what the new credit card is. I have a credit card.
Okay, so the credit card, Apple has been trying to redefine the way we use credit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really taking this kind of app approach to your credit, where your credit's being used. And so they're pushing it as a credit card. But what it really is the app that's in your phone. And the app in the phone does things like color codes your bill, make it flags things that look peculiar in front of you, lets you know. Integrates things like your thumbprint into the processing of credit cards or your facial recognition into process. So there's even less chance that somebody could use your credit because it needs that two-factor of you being there to go through the phone for the processing.
And however, you know, they give you money back on your credit card, and that goes into cash, Apple Cash.
I was going to say, yeah.
You cannot use that money unless they have your bank account information to put that Apple Cash into your bank account to use it. You can't use that Apple Cash to pay your credit, your Apple credit card bill.
You cannot. They can't. Well, unless you put in a bank account and then use the bank account to pay off the credit card. Yeah, but they do. They give cash back on all your purchases on just right from the beginning. And they have no annual fees. That's what I read in their propaganda. I don't know exactly how that works, but there's no annual fees.
I think there are foreign transaction fees, however. I can't remember. Because I do not use my Apple card very often.
What about the interest rate? Is it a fixed interest rate?
I have no idea.
The big thing that they mentioned, though, is the way that they're dealing with credit and sharing it with your family. They're calling it a family credit card. And so your spouse, of course, just like before, can be on the same credit card. The big difference is you're both building credit ratings of the same value now. I don't know if you remember when they first started their credit card, they got in trouble because a number of spouses were finding that their wives, specifically their wives' credits, weren't building to as high a credit score as the husband's credit score, even though they had the same accounts, bank accounts, credit cards, everything the same, but there was a gender bias in there somehow. And so they say they've changed the way all that works. Their underwriters, Goldman Sachs, has had to deal with the way that they've presented this. And so now you're building credit equally.
My experience dealing with Goldman Sachs to find out why I couldn't use this $1.30 that I have accrued cash was very unsatisfying, and they really didn't know the answer. And it took me going in and trying to find the answer, and it finally comes out, yes, you have to give them your bank account information, which is against my principle. They don't need my bank account information.
Hey, going back to the iPad for a moment, I finally found the camera. The camera on the iPad Classic is an 8-megapixel camera.
And the other one is?
The new iPad Pros are 12-megapixel with the 10-megapixel
in front.
Yeah, ultra wide.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's a difference.
Yeah. Well, it's difficult to say. I mean, software plays a big part in it. Apple's notorious for not upgrading their cameras. They do all this magic with their software and then they keep the same cameras. That's one of the things that was impressive with these iMacs that they announced, these M1 iMacs that are colored. They've got 7 colors. They look like tablets on stands. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but they look like... I think they're hitting the market precisely correct at this moment. The moment I saw them at the price point, I thought, do I need to buy one or two of those for my kids for school? Seriously, they are just... they're beautiful. This is a side shot of them. They're so thin, they look like tablets on screens, but they're 24-inch screens. They're 11.5 millimeters thick. They're so thin that they couldn't put the audio jack from the headphone through the back like they used to. They had to move it to the side because the thickness of the audio jack is thicker. It's longer than the screen is thick. Their price, they start at $1,300. The all-in-one with the keyboard that had the, actually, I think you have to get the next, I think you have to get the $1,500 one to have the secure enclave, but they've integrated a Touch ID on the keyboard. And that's got an encrypted channel between the keyboard and the device. So even if you were in a situation where you had an eavesdropping on wireless keyboards, it would be nonsensical because it's encrypted. Four ports, 2 USB 3 ports, 2 Thunderbolt ports. One of the things that I liked when we were looking at these in the demonstration is they showed us the box they come in. And the box is a thin little, like, laptop box, if you've ever bought a brand new laptop. And it's got a handle on it. And I had this fantasy, well, why not just stick this in a box and carry it around with you? I think the one thing that they haven't done right is they still haven't put a touch screen on it. So it looks, it has this look like a huge tablet on a stand, but you can't touch it. But to think $1,300 in a box, you just set it up and go, fastest chip on the market right now. A completely redesign on how we use chips. If you had a young person that's in school, this makes so much sense for video production, for presentations, for music. I mean, this would just pop right into a studio. The camera is updated to a 1080 camera. Before, it had been a 720p camera. And that's what I was getting at about Apple stuff, is they just have not been good about putting... They got these beautiful cameras on their iPhones, and they don't put them anywhere else. And they've color matched the Magic Keyboard and the Magic Mouse. So everything, including the power cable, is color matched to your Macintosh. Stylish and powerful. And what's to keep in mind is that this is their low end. Most powerful computers we can get right now on the market at this price point, a competitor to this in a PC space, you're deep in thousands and thousands of dollars and lots of heat exchange. You're looking at lots of thermal issues, lots of memory being used for graphics to produce the same product out of the computer. This computer can produce the same product as a huge, beefy PC using the traditional technology. Spend thousands of dollars for it. This is a $1,300 computer that can do this. So I think they've hit the market precisely correct, but I'm really excited for when the M2, they've already started talking about the M2, and that's going to come out, I suspect, in the next 6 months, and that's going to be the mid to high end. And when we go mid to high end with this stuff, it's just going to blow the PC market away. And I'm really excited to see what this kind of effect's going to have with HPs and Dells and Intel in their current situation and Qualcomm in their current situation. Microsoft's already been in talks with Qualcomm to do the same kind of thing, design a chip to their specifications for their Surface line of laptops. Okay, I'm drooling over the equipment. Now let me tell you the really silly stuff that is the biggest deal with Apple right now, and it's these AirTags. I don't know if anybody's been paying attention to AirTags. If you've ever gotten into one of those tracker tags, I did it for a while. I got a hold of a couple. I think somebody gave me some for my birthday, and I set them up with batteries, and I set up the software on my phone, and I could use them to track down devices that have gotten stolen or lost. I didn't have anything stolen. I just read that in propaganda. You could use your phone to go find one of these tags in your house. Say you put the tag on your keys and you can't find your keys. You could track it down to your bedroom or in the folds of the couch. This technology's been around for a while.
Do they work on husbands?
They could. You could put it on your husband. Now,
I was
Apple
casinos and not in the house so much, but
right. No, Cheryl, what a perfect use case would be the casino. But actually, I think you could use his phone as well.
Well, I did lose him in Costco the other day too. But yeah,
listen, Cheryl needs one for me because I walk around the house. I walk, I'm not sneaking. I'm not quiet. I'm just walking down the hall. Come out in the living room, scare the hell out of her. She jumps.
Well,
this morning I walked around down the hall and to her bathroom, and she goes, "Whoa, you scared me. What the hell?" If I was crawling along the carpet or something.
I'm afraid in your house this would be kind of like wearing a cowbell.
Yeah, Bell the cat.
What Apple has done differently than these other tracker fobs have done is they focused on privacy. And so there's a whole bunch of stuff in privacy that I will get to in just a moment. But if you look on my screen, you'll see this is what one of these looks like. They sell for $30, which is a little expensive in this area of the market, but you can buy four of them for $100, which is almost the exact same price of the competitors. They've integrated this into their app system called Find My. So the same system that you would use to find your lost iPhone or your stolen iPhone, you can now find these tracker fobs. And they've created, this is where it gets silly, they have created all these accessories for these fobs, including engraving. You can have an icon, you can have an emoji engraved on it, or you can have your initials engraved on it. But if you can see my screen clearly, you can turn it
Not clear.
Here, I'll turn into a presentation. You can get.
I was trying to figure out if it was AirTag.
AirTag is the name of it. And look at this. There's a leather key ring that you can make it a key ring for $35.
Nice.
For $40, you can have a leather loop. Here's where it gets crazy. You can get an AirTag Hermes keyring for $350. Does not include the tracker.
Sign me up.
Wow.
So, do the other rings include the tracker?
No, none of these include the tracker. So you got $30 for the tracker, and then whatever you spend on an accessory. I mean, you could use Scotch tape on the tracker. You don't have to buy one of these accessories. But this is Apple's market. Here's a $300 bag charm from Hermes. Doesn't include the tracker.
If this is on my key ring, how does this help me find my keys?
Yeah, what it does is it shows up on your phone on a map, a tracking map, and then it'll use this, I think it's LiDAR or something similar, to track it down within feet. So if you have one of the later iPhones, I think it's iPhone 11 and newer, then it'll actually have step by it. It's funny, I'm making gestures to a camera and you guys can't even see me. You will have step by step arrow instructions on the screen of your phone directing you to where this tag is. It'll point an arrow and you'll follow your phone arrow to where the device where this tracker is.
So if a thief has it, you're going to walk right up to him. And then they're going to have your phone and your keys.
Okay, so this gets a little weird. Because of their emphasis on privacy, they have developed this system where if you get close to your device, it starts beeping at you. So if you get close to that thief, if that tracker encounters your phone, then it's going to start beeping. Probably before you're within arm's length of them. It's just going to start beeping at them. It will also provide information to how to get a hold of the owner. If you have ended up with a fob, like you were talking about tracking a husband, if that fob comes within your home, which is one of your regular locations, then it'll start beeping and talking to you. It'll even, from what I heard, it will even tell you how to take the battery out so that it'll stop beeping at you. Like, say, Bill's got Cheryl's tracker in his pocket at home, and he just needs it to stop beeping at him. Apparently, it'll tell you how to take the battery out so it'll stop beeping at you.
Out of the tracker?
Out of the tracker. But only...
Is there a battery in it?
Oh, yeah, there's batteries in them. Yeah,
how big is this thing?
It's about the size of a quarter. Little larger than a quarter. It takes that standard CR2032 battery, that watch battery, that fat watch battery.
So it's too thick to go between my phone and my case.
Right. But again, you don't need the tracker for a phone because the phone tracks itself. Say again.
Oh, sorry. I guess what popped up when you're talking about the phone and everything. So do we need a tracker for the tracker?
Right.
Or will the phone act as that?
Wouldn't that be an interesting situation where you're having so much trouble maintaining the batteries that you just kind of scotch tape three trackers together, all at different forms, different states of their battery life. One goes out, you still got another one running.
But I think you're going to get to the point where you, the same as the fire, the smoke alarm syndrome. You take the battery out of the smoke alarm to quit beeping at you, and you forget to put it back in. Now your tracker is just a really fancy, expensive key fob.
Well, again, all of this is theoretical. This is all derived from what journalists have been reviewing and finding out from official sources. And so none of the we haven't seen any of these in hand to see how they're going to behave. But there is a chirp like the fire alarm, like you said, Bill. From the discussions I've heard, it sounds to me like that chirp that you might be dealing with is quite literally the scenario that I explained. It's Cheryl's tracker. It's not your tracker, right? Well, and if it was your tracker, then it would see you. It would see your phone, and it wouldn't have to chirp at you anymore because it's made its way home, if that makes sense. The other thing that was something they focused on was the stalking potential. Like the ability to drop one of these in somebody's pocket and keep track of where they go. And so there's this balance between privacy and security they've been trying to make with this stuff. And one of the odd things they've done, I mean, I don't know if it's bad. I'm indifferent to it. I'm curious to see how it plays out. But apparently, say somebody stuck it in your pocket and you end up in one of your standard areas. And if you go into the Find My app, they have these things. I can't remember the exact terminology. It's something like a standard area or my normal locations. It's some language like that. But what you'll find is the phone's been keeping track of those places that you frequent, your regular Starbucks, your office location, your school location, your home location. It's been assigning a weight and value to those things and deciding what your regular locations are. A regular location could be a child's house or a parent's house, because you're just frequently there. So apparently, going back to having somebody else's tracker in your pocket, if you go to one of your standard locations, even though it's somebody else's tracker, it'll start chirping at you to let you know there's a tracker on you, so that you can find it and know that there is a tracker on you. So it's an interesting situation. I wonder if hackers will find a way to have a standard location that doesn't have a location. So they could build a device that would scan themselves for trackers, if you follow what I mean. Like they could run a wand over their bodies and set it off, because it's a standard location for you, without giving away their actual location. It seems to be really well thought out. And what they did last year is they allowed a number of companies to join up. So there's some e-bike.
Come on, earthquake. Still going.
We can see your screen rolling, Mom.
Yeah.
I don't,
it's probably a 4.9,
wow.
4.2, something like that. All right, back to your subject.
Nothing,
we're fine.
Nothing fell off the wall. It's not a real earthquake.
No, nothing's rattling now.
Why aren't you in the doorway? I thought you were supposed to be hiding in the bathroom.
My house sways.
Yeah. She's got earthquake blocks on the house.
It'll sway back and forth. We're fine.
It's Alaska. You don't get in the doorway until something falls off the wall.
That's right. When it starts falling, then you duck for cover. All right, that's done.
It's too bad we're not doing bed and breakfast, because that's always a fun activity for tourists.
Oh, yeah, but it only happens at midnight when tourists are here.
So you should have a built-in house shaker just to give them the experience and just tell them, it was just a little one.
Well, you know what you can.
Californians are never interested in that.
Funny how that works.
Well, Bill, don't you guys get earthquakes?
No.
No?
Never.
They had a couple of tremors close to the mountains, but we're far enough away we didn't feel a deer. Oh. But, yeah.
Hey, well, I'm going to get off all this Apple stuff. I just want to mention one more, unless you got questions about anything that I've shared. I wanted to mention that they've done some changes to Apple TV, and what they have done is they've built the ultimate remote control finally, because anybody that has an Apple TV realizes that Johnny Ives decided to make a really sexy looking remote control that's almost useless. It's a plane of glass. It's a remote control for your TV, and it'll slide off of your couch because it's made of glass, hit the ground and shatter because it's made of glass. You will pick it up, and 50% of the time, you'll be pointing the wrong end because it's made of glass. 50% of the time, you'll touch it and trigger something because half the remote is a touchpad, the other half is not, but the whole thing is made of glass. It was a horrible idea, and it's been a horrible idea, and now they've got an aluminum remote control with controls that are reminiscent of some of the original iPods with a dial wheel and a D controller. It makes so much sense. I wonder if they're going to release the remote for all the Apple TVs. If you could just buy the remote by itself, I hope they do. It's an awesome idea. And here's the silly thing that I want to end this Apple presentation with. They didn't build a tracker into it. So when you lose the remote, you can't use your phone to find it. You're going to have to scotch tape a tracker to the back of it. You're going to pay $30 for a tracker to add to your new remote control, and then you're going to use some double-sided tape to stick it to the remote control so you can find it when you lose it. But when you lose it, you don't have to worry about it getting kicked around and shattering because it's not made of glass anymore. I'm done. I'm done with Apple stuff, unless somebody
All right,
has
I have new information on Earthquake.
Oh, good.
It's a 4.9, which is much bigger than I thought it would be. And it's Port McKenzie, which is kind of across the water from us, maybe, what, Scott, 5 miles away?
Yeah, that's
nice. No, 10 miles away. 10 miles away, it says. And it was 23 miles down. So that's why we didn't fall apart.
All right. 4.9. Wow. That is bigger than you were thinking. But still, nothing fell off the wall.
That's good.
Okay, is it my turn?
I don't know. I got a lot of topics. What do you got, Bill? We'll decide.
But you've been talking Apple for 2 hours
now. Okay.
No, mine's very small, very simple. I put it on the chat, a link on the chat.
Oh, good.
And it's a fishing lure, a smart fishing lure. So basically what you do is you use it.
Wait, whose chat did you put the link on? I don't see it here.
Yeah, it's there. Oh. Is my – you find it?
No, all I see are the links that I put up here.
Well, that's because you came in late, Scott.
Oh, maybe you put it on when I was trying to fix my system.
Anyway, what it does is it keeps track of, you know, what your fishing lure is doing. And if you catch a fish or you have a bite, you pull it up, you download the information that is captured on your phone, and you can reset your lure when you come back that was a successful setting. So it's a smart fishing lure. You got to love it.
So it's using some AI to determine what was the best conditions.
If it's using AI. It's just recording the conditions as it goes along. And then when you have a strike or when you catch a fish, you bring it up and you download that information, the current information that was into. And you can reset your lure to go back to that configuration. So you could have.
I mean, when you say that, what is it? Like a water sensor, power button, other sensors? So does it like change the way it spins or?
Well, yeah, the depth, it'll change the depth. As I understand it, it'll go to the configuration that was successful in catching a fish. And I believe you can have several different configurations and
so it's a bit autonomous. It's a bit autonomous. The idea is that, I mean, it's kind of like an autonomous drone. You throw it in the water and it finds the depth that's appropriate for the last successful catch and behaves in the way that was last successful. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's a video here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just saw it. I figured this is something that a dyed-in-the-wool, you know, fisherman would love to have. It's probably $300 or $400 for it, so they would love to spend money on that.
It does say that it's a kickstart, one of those where it's an idea. It's
right.
Not in production yet.
And then you hit the snag and lose it.
Well, it does talk about that in the last paragraph. It says, you know, that if you, quite often you lose your lures, and it talks about that.
It won't come home. I mean, it wouldn't get itself free and come home. Like this.
In the palm of his hand, it was so large.
It was pretty big. Anyway, that's it.
So, I just sent that link to my brother-in-law, who is an avid fisherman. So we'll see if he looks at it.
I'm adding it to our list here.
I just sent the link to Irving. We'll see what he says.
Oh, yeah. We're going to hear from him now. Well, that is very cool. Thank you, Bill.
I have a question.
Yes. Go ahead. Paul, what you got?
So now I'm in Mexico, and I brought my Fire Stick for the TV, smart TV, and I plugged it in. But there's very little that I can watch because my TV's in Mexico.
That's right.
So I want to know, the modem that I get from Guam, can that accept a VPN? Because we have Malwarebytes VPN. Can I install that in his modem?
No, I don't think that particular VPN would work that way. And the modem or the router that you use would have to specifically support VPN to be set up for VPN. And
but you don't know that his does.
Yeah, I don't think he distributes one that has those configurations.
In fact, he prefers not try to do that.
But you know what you could do, Paul, is you could do that smart DNS, or you could get a VPN modem. Or I'm sorry, I keep interchanging the words, and I mean specifically a router, a VPN router. Like you could do Express VPN, and they have routers that they recommend because they've built software for Express VPN.
Wait a minute, I'm confused because we have a Fire Stick and we downloaded our Express VPN the Fire Stick.
No, sure, you're right. Thanks for bringing that up, because if you were an Express VPN customer, you could install that. Well, now that we say that, the Malwarebytes, is there a VPN for Android? Because you might be able to install that right into your Fire Stick.
Yeah, because I have it for my phone too.
Yeah, if you have it for your phone, then there might be a version that you can put into your Fire Stick. Malwarebytes, VPN, Fire Stick. I'm doing a Google.
Yeah, because we're bringing our
that.
Fire Stick down, and I use the Fire Stick. I connect to the VPN, and then I use Stremio, and I use Netflix through the VPN on the Fire Stick. And I get the U.S.
Here is the instructions for putting, well, that's Malwarebytes, though. Malwarebytes, install Malwarebytes.
I thought Malwarebytes was different than a VPN.
Well, you said it's the Malwarebytes VPN service, right?
Yeah we just acquired it. And my sister-in-law installed it on our phones and our laptops.
Installed on
I can use my laptop to see everything that, you know, the Discovery Plus and HBO Plus and stuff like that. And so we put it on a chair and sit on the couch staring at the laptop. But I just soon be able to get it on the smart TV also.
Well, because it's an Amazon TV, then if you can find an Android version, there's a good chance you can install it on, just like ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is available for installing in your Fire Stick, and you can run that app and then run your Amazon, all your apps across that VPN. That ExpressVPN, it works for Amazon Prime as well, doesn't it, Cheryl?
I don't know that I've turned it on at the same time I've used the Prime.
Theoretically,
check that out.
Yeah, theoretically it would work, but there is the issue of it being an Amazon device. It may be self-aware. It may be aware that you're running a VPN and not allowing you to access the Prime content. I guess I haven't played with that before.
Yeah, I haven't tried it out because
see what I can do.
Yeah, I have no experience with Malwarebytes VPN, but I did just find this article about Malwarebytes VPN 2021 review. And so I'm going to read this later, but it looks like it talks about all the different devices that are compatible with it. And it's a review from Monkey Privacy. So you'll have their opinion on how good a service this is.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. If it was a Roku, you'd be doing what I was suggesting. You'd be using an alternate piece of equipment to form your VPN because Roku doesn't allow you to install things like the Fire Stick does.
I see.
Yeah, there is no VPN service that you can install in the Roku. And you can't make changes to the DNS like you would if you're using the Smart DNS proxy. The Roku is really locked down in that respect. So you have to create that environment before you plug the Roku in.
Okay, well, I'll play around with it then.
Hey, Scott, what's your phone number?
My phone number? You can have my cell phone number. It's my business phone number. It's 52-622-855-8299.
622-855-8299. Okay.
So I have got some other topics here if you guys are interested.
Hey, I have things that I watched and a book to recommend.
Oh, my gosh. This is a full meeting. Let me hit two very easy topics that will take us almost no time. And then let's go on to some recommendations unless people have things they need to share. Was that you, Jim? Did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, we can just put it on the list. And that's discuss iOS 14.5 and whether we should download it for our phones.
Hey, a quick answer to that is do you already have 14?
Yes.
Then you want 5. If you're on 13, it might be a discussion, but since you're already on 14, you always want to have the latest version, the latest iteration of the current version. Your current version is 14, so you want the latest iteration of the current version.
Good. Thanks.
How long has that version been out? You also always want to wait a couple weeks.
I just read about it this morning, but the commentator was saying it plugs really dangerous security leaks and that you ought to do it as soon as you can.
You know, more and more journalists have been saying do it as soon as you can. I still kind of the – my process is I wait a week just to make sure there's no fallout. I would wait a week. Why be
– Scott, I just looked yesterday and it wasn't there, but it's here today and it says it – includes the option to unlock the iPhone with an Apple Watch while wearing a face mask, add support for AirTag, and introduces separate skin tone variations for emojis for couples.
You know, I'm understanding what's going on now. This is the update because of AirTags. This is the update because of the announcement last week.
Yes.
So
I don't... It says nothing, Jim, about security when I'm reading it on my phone.
Yeah,
I've read that. I saw just an article from one of the technical websites.
You know, the way Apple does its propaganda, the security fix could be the mask face ID unlock.
Right.
That could be the security fix. Basically, I bet there's nothing in it that you need to continue to do what you're doing right now.
Use those AirTags.
Unless you're upgrading to the AirTags.
Okay.
But that was my qualifier, is you don't need any of it to do what you're doing right this moment. And my rule of thumb would be to wait a week or two before installing any iteration just to watch the fallout, because I don't like to be a guinea pig. I don't want to be the one that it falls out with.
Okay.
And I have got two topics that should go really quick. One is, did you hear that they're opening an Amazon distribution center in Hermosillo?
No.
The governor has already said it's going to create hundreds of new jobs, boost the economy, and provide faster delivery for Sonorans and other northern Mexican states. This is a big deal. This is going to happen in Hermosillo. We might actually get to experience same-day delivery. Wouldn't that be amazing if you needed a USB cable and you could just hit it on your phone and 4 hours later it shows up at your door?
How long does it take now?
Up to 2 weeks. But but we've been – the products that are here are – what do you mean? Some things can even take longer than 2 weeks, but you could reasonably
– I got printer cartridges in 4 days.
Right. I said up to 2 weeks, Judy. Up to two weeks.
Four days.
Right. I was just going to say that. I was going to say that we've had great experiences. We've had things show up sooner than that. But I don't think you make a purchase on Amazon in Mexico without expecting that it could take up to 2 weeks. Now we're talking about we might get that printer cartridge in 4 hours, which would be amazing. But if they standardize the 4 days, that's awesome too.
It is. We're still waiting a month out for stuff to show up here.
You know, that's always the big joke between my Mexican family and my Alaskan family, is that there are things we can buy easier on Amazon in Mexico than we can in Amazon in Alaska. Things like batteries. There's a whole list of products we can't even get shipped to Alaska.
2 weeks is nothing. I can remember people getting Christmas cards down here in June.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, they used to say that mail came on burrow.
Well, now with Amazon, it should start coming sooner. They'll show everybody up and they'll all have to work harder, the post office and stuff, maybe.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that. And one of the things that Amazon has taken advantage of is all these little paqueterias that exist because they didn't have an infrastructure. They didn't have an Amazon delivery infrastructure. And so they would outsource these little paqueterias to deliver your packages. And I wonder if what we're seeing is the stepping stones to wiping those businesses out, whether intentional or not. You look at the way Amazon has taken on deliveries for themselves. It's just not hard to imagine they would get frustrated with the efficiency now that they're in the local area. Why don't they just manage their own delivery people? I'm going to put a link to this article in our chat. I do, because of the infrastructure here locally, I have trouble believing this is anything but a good thing to happen. At the very least, we've had some issues with the local paqueterias where they're inconsistent delivery times, inconsistent information. At the very least, it's going to have them sharp on their game. They wouldn't want Amazon looking at someone else doing those jobs. So that was one of my quick topics. There's a link there. I'll put it on today's meeting. If you want to see the write-up about it, there's also an audio version on that link so you can listen to the story. It can be read to you. The story is actually broke by FronterasDesk.org is actually a college newspaper. So I think it was like the University of Arizona or some university like that that's broken the story. My other very quick topic that I thought you guys would appreciate is that Samsung is added a feature in their phones, what is it called, in the SmartThings app to help you repurpose an old phone into an Internet of Things device. Hey, Fred's with us. Hello, Fred. Running a little behind schedule this morning. Here is a link to Samsung's upcycling. This is the PR for this kind of activity. It's called upcycling, not recycling. The idea is that your phone is full of things that might make a good Internet of Things device. So when you upgrade your phone, why not take your old phone and turn it into an Internet of Things device? Some of the things that are mentioned in this article is using it as a light sensor trigger, or as a sound sensor trigger. So you could use this device. I see Linda's lips moving, but we can't hear anything she's saying. I hope she's not trying to address us. The light sensor, this is the way I imagine it. You could have a USB plugged in old phone sitting in the corner of your room, and it's just paying attention to the sun going down. And as soon as it gets dark enough, it brings the lights up. incorporate something like that with Home Assist, you might have the lights being brought up gradually. As the sensor detects less and less light, it tells the lights to go up more and more, kind of a reverse dimmer situation. So things like that could be, you could use your phone. They also in the article mentioned that you could use it for barking dogs or a baby crying. You could turn it into a baby monitor, all part of your SmartThings app and network. This is pretty neat. You know, without even SmartThings, outside of the article, your old phone could be used as a universal remote control or maybe as a security webcam. And so this is a really neat way for these companies to be going. When you're buying your phone in the future, maybe you're thinking of it as a device for when you upgrade later. It's a camera. It's got, climate sensors in it. It's, a humidity sensor, something like that. A light sensor already in there. But so then this is, we've talked about creating a webcam, using it as a webcam. That's not a simple thing to do. That's a hackery thing to do. That's something that somebody like myself might do. But what if you were buying into a line of products where this is what else you can use your phone for? Maybe you want to use your phone as a webcam. Well, you go into the Samsung app. This is what I'm envisioning for the future. And you click that option. And then it changes the whole aspect of the phone to focus on that particular activity. And I see this happening in the future. It's because of this announcement. It looks like they are looking for ways that you can go ahead and upgrade your phone and your old phone still has purpose in your life.
Okay, what about BlackBerry, Palm Pilot, the collection that we have?
Yeah, again, this is Samsung. This is Samsung doing Samsung stuff. So maybe there's something in this is all in the SmartThings app. And it's experimental right now, but they're gonna release it shortly. It'll be a part of their packages now. When you buy a Samsung, you're gonna have this option to turn it into an Internet of Things device later on in its life. This is cool stuff.
Right. I just turned my old cell phone into you put the SmartThings in it and took out everything else, so it'll turn on the TVs and everything.
Have you integrated it with your remote for the Mirage remote? That's the thing I want to get. I still haven't gotten one yet for your air conditioner.
No, I used that other little remote for the Mirage.
Right? Okay.
And I left it at the house there when we sold it.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was $75, and I bought it at Home Depot in Guaymas.
I want to get that. I mean, this is my dream project. Hook up Home Assist and then tell Alexa to set my my air conditioner. like at noon, turn on the air. If you hear somebody in the house, turn on the air. Right? If it isn't already on and you hear movement, turn on the air.
Well, that little remote that I bought called Cubby, that's what it was called, Cubby. That now sets up with Alexa.
Is that Cubby?
Wasn't that it? Cubby?
I think so. That sounds familiar.
I think it was Cubby.
Okay.
Okay, but Mirage has one that clips up into the door.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Open the door and you see there's a little clip up in there. That's for the remote.
Okay.
Okay. So, what's his name that works for? Victor went and bought it up in Hermosillo, the remote.
Okay, the Mirage branded version.
Right, but he got it in Hermosillo. He said he couldn't find it in Guaymas, but that was about a year ago.
Well, yeah, I would imagine you'd be able to find it just online, but I guess, yeah.
Maybe, but they have a remote. That probably hooks up to her too.
So the beauty of that home assistant is being able to take things like the Mirage remote, the SmartThings bulbs, the Nest thermostat, and move it all into one interface for all your smart devices. And then you can build these flows. And just like I was mentioning, like if you hear somebody in the house, make sure the air is on. The idea is to automate so much of that stuff that you're not ever having to press a button or turn something on. It's just recognizing the environment and setting it accordingly. Turn on the outside lights of the house. You don't tell it to turn on the lights. It just starts getting dark and it decides it's time to turn the lights on.
Hmm.
This is cool. I think we're narrowing in on a really neat area of home automation with Samsung doing stuff like that, with Home Assistant out there, with Amazon doing so many of its products as Alexa compatible. It's a neat area that we're coming into.
Well, I bought all these little plugs for the lamps called TECKIN.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
From Amazon. Well, I also bought the front door light switch, which is great because you walk out of the house at 5:30 and it's not dark, but you come back and it's dark.
Right, and so it's turning itself on at dark time.
Correct. So it's a light switch. What? And then you set it up. It's better than those old light switches. I had those old light switches that you could hardly even understand how to get them set up.
Wait, is this the product that was like an access point as well?
Well, you just set them up with your phone and you set them up dusk to dawn.
What was the name of it again?
TECKIN.
CKIN.
Right.
Tekken.
I bought them on Amazon. They're cheap. They come in a 4-pack.
So, Linda, does that work with Wi-Fi then? Is that how it works?
I have them all set up on my phone.
You had had a device like that in the past. I'm just curious if it's the same one. And it seems like it also acted as a Wi-Fi repeater
or
extender.
These are just little, I don't know if you can see them.
Yeah.
These are just little plug-ins. And then the light switch is, that's a separate thing. And then I just downloaded the app.
Okay.
Kind of like the vacuum cleaner. Now, you know, we moved a couple months ago, and I had a heck of a time getting the vacuum cleaner reset up with the new Wi-Fi. I finally got it. We moved here 2 months.
I have to chuckle. That's the funniest sentence I've heard today. I moved, and I had trouble setting the vacuum cleaner up to the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
That's the world we're living in now. How come you didn't clean your room? Well, the Wi-Fi's down.
I just saw an ad for Mother's Day, and one of the gifts for Mother's Day was a remote, a robot vacuum cleaner.
I just love it. I love it. Oh, yeah. Well, it takes a little bit of cleaning because
right.
You get a lot of stuff in the brushes.
Our vacuum cleaner is Bill's Christmas present, not Cheryl's.
We got the same deal in my house.
Yeah. There you go.
Which robotic vacuum do you have?
The cats enjoy them the most.
I bought the Oofy.
The what?
We have a shark.
No, I bought the EUFY.
The EUFY.
And I don't think they have that model anymore. I bought the 25, but they have all kinds of models. I mean, my sister bought the, which one did she buy? Huh? My sister bought the Roomba, the real expensive one that comes where it goes back into its spot and then it empties into this container. I'm not that lazy.
That's what our shark does. Our shark is a self-cleaning. It sucks its garbage up into the container and you just empty it whenever.
Yeah, but the problem is all the stuff gets stuck on the brushes. You're
right.
Always cleaning the brushes and the rollers get dusty.
I hated the Roomba for that reason. All the hair would be wrapped up in it and you had to have the special applicator. It took longer to clean the vacuum cleaner after it cleaned the floor than it does to clean the floor.
I don't know.
Well, you are supposed to clean the floor regularly. That's the idea.
Yeah, I just set it up for 3 o'clock in the morning, and then it just turns on and goes all over the place. But the problem is you got to make sure your cords are all up. you know, there isn't stuff on the floor. Then it tries to climb up the rug. You got to pull back the rugs.
A real learning curve with them.
Right. Well, I have a big area rug, and it's got a lot of shag, different shag heights on it. So we have to roll up the rug, and then it wants to climb up over the part that is rolled up.
Oh, life is so rough.
Just another third world problem.
I'm not a robot to roll up my rug so I can vacuum, damn it.
That's right.
Well, I really like it because we did concrete floors in here, so I don't have tile grout anymore. It's really nice. And you don't hear the vacuum clomping over the tile floor. So
all you need now is that other robot, and you'll be all set. Cool.
Listen,
it's kind of a fun toy, you know, when you don't have anything else to spend your money on, I guess.
We have two. We wound up with this extra one by warranty somehow, and they never asked for the first one back. But I showed my son the other day. He was down in our rec room. We were playing eight ball. And I picked up the Roomba or the shark and just set it on the table and said, clean. Good. It cleans my pool table as well.
Really?
What? I imagine you want to make sure you have clean brushes before you do that.
No, the shark is way better than the Roomba. Especially the new one, it has a little bit different brush in it that doesn't seem to get all clogged up. Oh. Somebody has long hair in this house, and the old Roomba used to really get clogged up. But either I stopped shedding, or it's much better at picking it up.
Well, hey, I hate to cut this short, but we are running out of time, and somebody said they wanted to talk about recommendations. So why don't we do that, and then I'm going to have to run because I've got work scheduled today, and I'm running out of time.
Okay, so I'll just start. The Cunninghams told us that they were watching the Oscar nominees, and so I got onto that little thing too. And I used Stremio, and I watched Nomadland, and it starts with her working in the Amazon factory, whatever, warehouse, for a Christmas rush. And I just wanted to mention that part of it. It's tech related because it's the Amazon shop where she has her employment. Very interesting movie. People that have basically live off grid, but not by choice, but then it ends up being by choice. Anyways, an interesting movie, Nomadland, and it did win a couple Oscars. The other one was Sound of Metal, which is a really interesting thing. People know Susan King in San Carlos. Her brother was one of the executive producers on it, and it too won a couple of Oscars. Interesting thing about a metal rock band musician who goes deaf and his experiences with deafness. So interesting sound, and so I can see why it won. The Father, which is about Alzheimer's, and Anthony Hopkins won for Best Actor. Amazing portrayal, very upsetting, very, very it's not entertainment, it's extremely life, looking at life kind of movies. The other
more reality and less fantasy, right?
There's no fantasy in it at all, and it's not your romance.
Wait, are you saying there's no lightsabers in this?
No, there's no lightsabers. There's no sci-fi, but there's actually no glossing over anything. It's real life portrayals on film, which is depressing for some, but.
But he won that award, didn't he? He won the best actor for that?
Yeah. The book that our club just finished reading was The Last Town on Earth by Thomas Mullen. And it is about the pandemic, that the Spanish flu.
Oh, wow.
But it also has a lot of stuff about trying to live on your own and isolation and a little bit about being involved in wars. It was a really, really good read. I highly recommend it.
Is it a fast read? Is it big?
It's pretty, well, I don't know. I think Jim and Linda might not agree with us because they've been trying to read it on an audiobook or listen to it. And they.
That's probably a better way to judge it. How many hours is the audiobook?
Well, we're 15 hours into it. And we haven't finished it.
Okay, so it's not a little book.
you don't have a sense because it's electronic. Like I read it on my electronic reader, and so I'm not holding a book in my hand, and I kind of can't see. You know, you can go to the table of contents and see how far you are through it.
Sure,
all this,
sure.
But yeah, no, it's a very interesting read. It was written in 2006, and one of our girls just found it in a secondhand bookstore, and then it became very, very topical with the pandemic. And it's a good book.
Very interesting.
Well, that sounds great. Is there would anybody else like to share what they're reading or listening to, podcasts or videos they're watching or websites they've visited, recommendations for all of the above? So if you have something you think we should know about, please share. Anybody?
I forgot the one series that I watched.
Oh.
The one was called, it's Australian series, back to Australia again, guys. And it's called Wanted, two women that get involved in a thing. I think maybe Sandy's watched it, but yeah, it was a gripper that kept me going through all three seasons.
We're hoping they bring at least one more season back, but so far, no.
So you've been watching it as well?
Yeah, we watched a few years ago and found it really good. Like the women. The women are amazing in it, what they go through.
Oh, a lot of police corruption. Yeah.
Australia's putting out some good stuff, I think. We're still doing the McLeod's Daughters. And it's starting to get heavy. I don't know. We're in the sixth season, and there's some hard stuff that's happening with those lovely daughters. So we try not to binge because we want it to last a long time. We like to watch it right before we go to bed because we usually feel happy. But I don't know about this season. We may have to go to Wanted or something like that to go to sleep with. I don't know.
I noticed Yuya's taking that approach with Schitzel. She's starting to get down to the last few episodes, and it's taking longer and longer for her to get through them because she doesn't want them to end. Very funny show. If you guys haven't paid attention to it, it's a great show out of Israel. It's very funny. I think we talked about it last week or the week before. I don't have any recommendations. I did notice, though, I don't know if you guys are this kind of TV fan, but The Handmaid's Tale is just starting a new season. That is some really deep, dark sci-fi. We have not finished season 3. I may have to finish it by myself, not because it's not good, but because Yuya doesn't like to get that deeply depressed by stuff. It's too... She's like, I don't know.
Doesn't bother you, though, does it, Scott?
Well, the last time I asked her, I was like, hey, when were we going to finish watching this? She's like, I may never finish watching that. But it has nothing to do with the quality of the content is very high, but the subject matter is it gets depressing and dark.
Okay, I have a comment, Scott.
Sure.
Resident Alien.
Oh, yeah.
You recommended it. You recommended it last week or the week before.
Did you binge through it?
No, I try not to binge anything.
Okay.
But I find it as a remake of The Good Doctor, the TV series that my wife has watched, that basic autistic kind of acting. But I love the little kid that can see the alien.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And he's trying to...
Go ahead, Bill.
Go ahead. No, that's fine.
Oh, I was just going to say on that note, you're absolutely right. The autistic nature of the way he behaves buys him license. Like he's a doctor that lives in a cabin by himself with no social etiquette. They think it's because he's peculiar. You'll buy it because of your experience now being exposed to the way autism works. But in the end, it's because he's an alien. He doesn't know how to act correctly.
I loved it when he's watching videos and learning how to smile or when to laugh or whatever. You know, it is quite humorous. But
I usually get about one or two episodes in, and then I wind up doing something else. I get distracted.
Well, I think it's great, and we finished the whole thing. It's really funny, Resident Alien, and it's really well done. I like that Alan Tunick. He's an amazing performer. He's one of those guys that does such a good job you'll forget who he is because you're so involved in his character. He's that guy. He's that guy from that show. He always is.
Yeah, yeah. I have to always go back and look him up and find out what other shows, because I know I've seen him somewhere.
Yeah, he's got a huge list of things he's done and a lot of sci-fi.
He does. It's absolutely amazing. You look at his IMDb, and he is busy all the time.
Yeah.
He does a lot of stuff.
Great performer.
Anyway, that's my contribution to recommendation.
Anyone else have anything else they'd like to add? TV, movie, website, app you're using nowadays that you think's cool? Another book? Open to anything others might find interesting as we've been going through this pandemic, looking for things to occupy our times and mind?
Our most recent Amazon purchase that arrived the other day, we really missed seeing our hummingbirds this year. So Bill bought a solar wind chime light that is a hummingbird group. I didn't check it out last night to see if it had charged yesterday to see what it actually looks like with the solar lights. But we now have hummingbirds in our house.
So these are like autonomous hummingbirds. They're like metal hummingbirds or real hummingbirds.
No, they're little drones. They fly
little
around.
Drones. Okay.
They're plastic and they hang as a wind chime, but they do have the technology aspect that you have a solar pack that will light them up.
Oh, okay. So. Well, that's fun. Well, I don't have any recommendations for this. I mean, other than the topics that we covered earlier today, I still have a slew of topics because the last week there's been all kinds of interesting stuff happening. But I think I can save them for next week because I do need to bring our meeting to a close.
It's been 2 hours, so we're good.
We're good.
And lunch is almost ready.
Yeah. For anybody that's on YouTube, you've got to understand it's been 2 hours because we meet before the official meeting to make sure everything's working. So if you feel like you're missing the entire experience, you should join our meet before 10. get the full lowdown.
Well, we get to watch Scott trying to debug his system every day, every Tuesday morning.
Yeah. Today you got to watch me shut down as I reinstalled the sound card driver, which absolutely fixed the problem. I sound great. There's no feedback or buzz coming through. And it was totally a software thing causing all that conflict.
I like Paul's comment when you said, am I sounding okay? And he says, you sound okay. You sound great, but you don't look so good.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thanks. And on that note, I'm going to say goodbye.
Check on.
You guys have an awesome week, and I'll talk to you next week. Until then, tech on.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Fun being with you today. Bye.
See you, Jim. Hey, Fred. Fred's gone. Take care, Jim. See you, Cheryl. See you, Mom. Adios. Until next time. Where am I? Here I am. Yes, that was the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Tuesday from 10 till, well, from 10-ish to obviously 11-ish, almost 12 sometimes. We meet a little bit early and you know, check our settings, make sure everything's working correctly. Anyway, I'm Scott Stimson with International Computer Solutions. Give me a shout if you could use some tech help out there on the internet. You can reach me, scott@internationalcs.net. If you're interested in our club, check out sccclub.org. That's where you can find links to these videos. I publish this as a podcast. You can find us in iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Just search for the San Carlos Computer Club. That recording will be released later this week. Until then, you can always see us on YouTube. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for being with us. Until then, tech on.